Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Going to get a daytime episode because it is warm out-ish. It's going to be losing its heat here, so I put my jacket on so I have to go and switch out. So today I want to talk about forgetting reality. And I am intentionally coming up with a slightly provocative title on this. Because I slipped up on this theory in a previous episode, and it's changed my perspective of aging a little bit and of how to enjoy life to the very fullest and to perhaps slow down this illusion that life gets faster as you get older. And then we're going to, on the fly, explore perhaps how to do this, how to inhibit this problem. Here's the theory that I came up with during recording a show that seems utterly profound the more I think about it, and I've shared it with some friends of mine who are older, and everyone's sort of going, wow, that makes complete sense. So I dig this show. So I dig this process of digging in the mind. Again, the universe has all the answers. We have to write the right query back to the universe to get back results such that we can continue this enlightenment process, you know, attempting to enhance ourselves. So the theory I riffed, I think it might have been on the aging episode, which is this. When you're young, time is very meticulous, tedious, and you see and remember virtually every second, every minute, every hour of your life when you're young. When you get older, you can't even remember where the years went. 10 years will pass, and you're like, wow, that was nothing. Now, there's probably a little bit of perspective on time that because we have lived 10 years multiple times, when you get to 40, you've done it 4 times, that perhaps the next one is going to be a little bit quicker. But I'm here to tell you, I don't think that's the case anymore. I think it's a biological mental thing that's occurring here that makes it seem like it's going faster. And it has to do with forgetting reality. When you look back on being a kid, and some of us have, you know, great memories on that. You can remember being 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You can remember going to school. You remember your teachers. You remember your friends. You remember walking to school. You remember coming home every single day, what you did, how you played, when you were bored, when you were excited, all those things. And then you can't seem to do it as you get older. You have selective pockets over the course of 10 years. I think our brain is erasing memories of the mundane. Part of this, again, is kicked off by the Westworld analogy, which is that these hosts were in loops. And then you find out that one of the accusations towards humanity in that first season is that people believe that they have more elaborate loops, but they don't. They actually have tighter, more boring loops. And it's not until they come into the park of Westworld, this fictional place, that they realize that they live some loops that they never had before. Maybe they don't even do a loop. But they are using other hosts who are in loops to facilitate a treasure hunt, finding a bad guy, having a shootout, whatever. We know that when we drive to work every single day, if you have the same job for any number of years, you will get to a point where you forget the trip. This started happening to me when I was probably 16. I got my first job across town. It was like I had 2 jobs in the same parking lot, clear on the other side of town, which is a whole, I don't know, 3 miles maybe. And I would get to work, and it's when someone told me that whole analogy that people forget going through traffic lights. And you'll get to your destination, you realize, oh my God, did I even go through green lights? Did I go through red lights? I can't even remember. When someone says, what'd you eat for breakfast? And you're like, what the hell did I eat for breakfast? And it's only like 8 o'clock at night, and you can't remember if you had breakfast. This starts happening fairly early in our lives, and I think it's a sheer defense mechanism of our consciousness going, why do you want to remember all that crap? Do you really want to remember all that crap? Do you want to remember every time you bathe? Every time you shower? Every time you put your clothes on? Every time you go to the restroom? Nah. Those are just stupid loops you do that have no effect on you. And so I'm going to just, you know, throw them out. Why hold on to them? It's just like holding on to every spam email that you've ever had in your life. Why? It has no value. Once you look at it and go, this is not something I solicited. They're trying to sell me some crap I don't want. Poof, it's gone. So the reason why I'm calling this episode Forgetting Reality is that that's what I think the brain is doing. And we have to explore why we think that might be occurring. But as you get older, your routines get more looped. And it's not necessarily a horrible thing, but it's something I think we should know about ourselves neurologically, mentally, spiritually, such that we can choose whether or not we want to keep that routine in our life. Do you want to remember more of your life? Do you want to get more out of a 10-year lifespan? I mean, not like you're going to die at the 10 years, but I'm just saying, for each decade that you're living, and of course we monetize we enumerate our lives where it's, I'm in my 30s, I'm in my 40s, it's just some arbitrary weird thing that we do to ourselves. And because of neural peptides, we have to be very careful. We perceive ourselves, and our neural peptides kick into action and create the body, the physical aging that you believe that you are. I can prove it. I can prove it, prove it, prove it. When I went back to my high school reunion again, just recently, my 30th, a couple years ago, everybody who was like slapping their belly and going, I'm getting old, you know, it's like they're the same age as me, maybe plus or minus a year. My God, they looked 10 years older than me, easily. And everyone in the room that looked really young and good, good skin, managed to keep their weight down, you know, they're more, you know, we're all a little bit thicker, but not much. If we wanted washboard abs, we could probably end up exercising for about 6 months and look better than we did at 18. Not these other people who keep rattling on about how old they are. Some of the women will marry guys that are like 10 years older than them, which is fine. But the guys are physically older, and they are in that camp of being with older people, and so they start aging up to that group of friends, because the neural peptides are all different. The frequency is different. It's older, slower, more set in its ways. The loops are super tight, and maybe boring, maybe not. Maybe the tightest loop out there that someone has in whatever part of the world they are is the, like, it's like brainstorming the guy looped the orgasm on the tape. Now, I think there are other things that contribute to this. And I think it all is based on the same principle. Loops, loops, loops. Let's say you're a very busy person. You live a remarkable life. You do something where you create something amazing. I mean, again, I always lean back to the stuff that I see in my world. So I've got buddies of mine who do visual effects and make films and da 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 da. Sometimes I'm involved with the project, sometimes I'm not. So they might say, well, geez, for 3 years I made Battlestar Galactica, then I popped out and I made this movie, that movie, this movie, and then I got back on this Apple commercial, and I did just, they have this, for 10 years they've gotten damn near, you know, a statue for every year they've been in the business, and their IMDb just continually explodes. But they will still have the problem when they get to the end of 10 years, and I'll have conversations with them, and we have this epiphany that the 10 years just flew by. Now, am I saying it's wrong that years fly by? Not at all. You would be the only one to deduce and make the decision as to whether or not you think life is going by too quickly. It is a fact that as we do get older, our faculties, our physical instrumentalities do tend to break down. But a lot of times, if you eat healthy and you get good sleep and you don't stress too much, you can prolong that period for a very long time. I want to give you a little story. I've told it only one time before so that you can perceive age a little bit differently. I was in a special math class and it was held inside a machine shop, because the machine shop teacher was, by all stretches of the imagination, a complete genius. He was the guy that originally built the guitar pickup and had it ripped off from him. And then Les Paul came around and goes, look at me. This guy was taught by the military how to build dirty bombs back in the post-World War II days. So he was a physicist as well. So the guy's a genius. I just tell you that because the integrity of the comment that and his family is involved, I think, a little bit with the event that took place. So we're there, and the machine shop door was open. And the machine shop's full of all kinds of stuff. On the other side is wood. It's got a big, you know, firewall between it and this big building we had, and art was on the other floors up above. But this old guy comes in and backs the truck in, old Ford truck, and he is lifting these giant pieces of steel that had been worked into the back of his truck. He's an old guy. He's putting it all in there, and then the class was actually full of a couple farm boys that are used to baling hay, you know, big old hook, and, you know, grabbing 75-pound, you know, bales of hay and putting in the back of a truck, doing 150 a day kind of thing. These big, big dudes. And they were struggling to put this crap in the back of the truck. Well, this old man's just like one arm in this shit back there, just boom, boom, boom. He's a pretty big guy. He's probably about 6'2 to 6'4, somewhere in that realm. This old dude pushes up the truck back, starts his truck, takes off. And he came in and he looks at the teacher and he's like, was this my stuff right here? And he's like, yeah, that's your stuff. And the guy did all this stuff, and we, you know, some guys jumped up to help him. He was out in like, I don't know, 5 minutes. And so we all sat down to start the class again. And my buddy, who was one of the guys that jumped up to help, he goes, who was that guy? The teacher goes, that's my dad. Now, our teacher was definitely in his late 50s, at least. This would have been in the mid-80s. It'd be interesting to find out how old that guy was, because that's my dad. And the dude goes, well, how old is he? He's 97. The whole class is like, what? One, he's driving his own truck. The guy, I mean, he looked older, but I mean, I don't know. He had silver hair, but I think we probably would have estimated, I don't know, late 60s, early 70s, something like that. And this guy was a golem. He was built out of steel. Like, he could just grab steel and just hurl it in the back of his truck. And he was grabbing the bigger pieces. And so everyone's just like looking at each other, because we're young kids, you know. We're all in our teens, from probably 15 to 18, somewhere in that realm, in that room. And it just kind of came and went. And he's like, oh, yeah, he's really, you know, he just never stops. So he's still really strong. His eyes work. He's driving a truck. It was ridiculous. Now, the only thing I could assume is that we heard the age a little bit wrong, but I don't give a crap that this guy was 20 years younger. I don't care if he was 77 years old. What he did was utterly phenomenal, but I'm pretty sure we got it right, especially based on the age of our teacher. The reason why I tell you that story is that the perception of age is such a powerful mechanism when it does come to your neuropeptides. If you want to know a lot about neuropeptides, go watch the movie What the Bleep Do We Know? That's what it's called, because they wouldn't use the F-bomb or whatever. But they have a bunch of physicists, quantum physics people, neurologists, and they talk about this and how it works, and it will change you a little bit. I tell you that story, one, just part entertainment, but the other part is, I think, you know, living in the big city, depending on where you live, life can be harder than the little country town I grew up in, that this old guy grew up in. And so you may get to a point, and nobody wants to ever admit this. This is crazy. I've definitely met people like this in my lifetime. And I think even at a younger age, this will ping your heart every once in a while. When things get really tough, financially tough, relationship tough, parenting tough, job tough, whatever, you'll hear that old analogy, life's a bitch and then you die. And the big thing is that if you do die, all this pain goes away. Your taxes go away. All the burden of existence goes away. And so some people secretly, romantically fall in love with dying. And I don't personally have that, just so you know. Definitely felt the ping in my lifetime. I'm like, oh, that is true. Yeah, if I do die, well, then whatever. You know, I did my best while I was here, you know, worked really hard, and I treated every day like it was my last, and da-da-da-da. But I have friends in Hollywood who have accomplished everything they set out to accomplish, and that must be a really strange feeling. I almost feel sorry for them, okay? But they will talk about how they don't want to live very much longer than they already have lived. Like, they'll be in their late 60s, and they'll be just talking about, oh, well, you know, I don't really want to live that long. Or we'll talk about a mutual friend who's older, who's suffering health problems, and they'll say, why does that person want to live? I don't understand. Die already, you know? Not like they want them to die, but it's just like, you've done everything. You're amazing. Now just stop trying to live. Stop trying to get through all your, you know, your illnesses and stuff like that. And, you know, I politely listen. And what's interesting is one of my friends has a child, and he's probably in his late 60s, and his child has not had a child yet. And so that unbelievable moment of being a grandparent hasn't occurred yet. And so he's talking about only wanting to live, I don't know, maybe 7 more years or something like that, or even less. And I'm sitting there looking at the guy, like, coming from a small town. I'm like, you know, you have no clue what you're talking about, because as soon as you see your grandchild, your whole commitment to life will reinforce, reinvent, and you will not have such a laissez-faire opinion of death. You just won't. Not unless he gets mentally ill himself for some other reason. You know, and this has come up a few times in the comments on YouTube, so I think I'll throw it back into this episode. And I mentioned something about Wade and James in the episode 2 of the Neverland thing, Leaving Neverland. And I basically put out the caution, you know, gentlemen, you better be telling the truth, because I've been on the edge of life, and it's, if you, like, there's consequences on the other side. There are. What, you know, I don't believe in hell and brimstone or a Satan or anything like that. I just think that a scarlet letter is a pretty bad thing to create for yourself. I think we create our own hells. I absolutely do. And so, you know, when I was 23, I think I was 23 years old, got in a relationship. It was going really south. I was finding out that I got dumped for an event I didn't have anything to do with, and the girl was really embarrassed when she realized that she had miscalculated her big epiphany as to why she should leave me. It was funny. And then she ended up trying to come back to me right after I found the mother of my kid, you know. So I was like, sorry, can't go back. You know, I got this really amazing woman, and she wasn't pregnant yet, but I just couldn't go backwards, right? But before all that took place, I tried to drink sleeping pills. It was hilarious. It's a comedy, me doing this, okay? But the one thing that was very serious was that I attempted to drink this. It was gross. I poured it all out. I was laughing my ass off. But then I started getting really tired because I did gulp quite a bit of this down. Not enough to puke. But I'm sitting on the edge of my bed in a studio apartment, which, if you haven't been in one of those, it's a 20 by 20 box with a built-in the bathroom, the kitchen, and the closet all into one side. And the rest is just an open room. You just do whatever you want. So I'm sitting on the edge of the bed, and I'm probably about 3 feet from a sliding glass door over here to my left. Okay. And I didn't go to work that day. I just said, fuck it, I'm not going to work. And I had a pretty nice brand new carpet in the room. And so if I moved around, I got those carpet fibers, you know, kind of floating in the sunlight. And, you know, it could have been a hallucination induced by this stuff I drank, but I only took one gulp of this stuff. I put blue pills and orange juice, and it turned green, so that was the funny part, first funny part. But it's all got the bitters in it, you know, so when I drank it, it was just like, blech, it was gross. And then I was realizing how stupid I was. So I'm sitting on the edge of the bed, like right here on my side. And I remember just staring off at the ground as I felt myself starting getting really tired, which I started making phone calls because I didn't want to fall asleep, just in case, right? I would have been fine. Probably would have slept the best sleep of my life. But anyway, I'm looking at the floor, and the floor vanishes, man. It falls, just like a Time Bandits Act 3 moment where it's like a forever pit to nowhere. But not only did it fall, all the little fibers in the air went down with it like a vacuum. Just woof. And the side of my bed, you know, was barely visible because it's right on my perspective line of my eyeballs. But I am looking down into this pit, and the pit talked to me, if you will. Something was talking to me. And it said, if you do this and succeed, like it's really the tense would be, if you do this again and you succeed, this is where you're going to go. And it was nothing. It was a nothingness. And it was so, you know, it's one of these weird situations where if I had to describe with words what this image meant to me, I'd be talking all day. And still probably, you know, atrociously paraphrase the moment. But I looked down in that pit and it was like, it basically said to me, we have worked so hard to give you this life. You have no idea. And you, for you to piss it away because of some relationship thing, which is the trials and tribulations we've designed this world to have. This is what you're supposed to go through in order to be a stronger in your next relationship, et cetera, in life, having a thick skin, right? And so at that point, it was full closure. Full closure on that event. Yours truly will never do that. Okay? You know, the only exception would be I'm a vegetable and I get a split second to communicate to everybody. I'm not thinking anymore, you know, pull the plug or whatever. But even that, I'm not even sure I give a shit about that. I'll be moon pie in Rollerball 1975. Just make sure I don't have any pain in me. I don't want to be sitting there in some torturous pain and not be able to tell anybody about it. Just check my brain waves or whatever. I mean, if nothing's happening in my brain, then nothing's happening, and you can do whatever you want, but I won't intentionally do it. So I mention that. It's because if the antithesis of your intent is to appreciate life, to get as much out of life as you possibly can, then maybe we have options. Maybe we have options with our loops. Mr. Crow flies by. See, I chased him off. He was the omen of death, and I got rid of him. He's like, screw this guy. He wants to live. So when do these really tight loops occur? Well, like I said, there's little ones that start the second you start driving, for sure. And there's probably even microscopic ones when you're a little kid and your parents are taking you to school and taking you home and all that kind of stuff. Maybe even class seems a little boring every once in a while, so you don't remember all that. But your 20s is, at least it traditionally used to be when you got a job and you started kicking ass and taking names. But by your 30s, I think that whatever decisions you made in your 20s start to really solidify, don't they? You've picked a place to live, unless you're in the military or something. You picked a place to live, and that's going to be your house, and it's going to be your neighborhood, that's going to be your friends. These are the restaurants and the grocery stores you're going to go to for entertainment. Maybe live by a lake, a beach, amusement park, maybe all the above. And I think for me, it, because my neighbors, like I said in many episodes, they go out and they party together. They're big families, a slightly younger situation. And so I look at that and I'm thinking, man, they really do enjoy themselves. But they do tend to do the same thing over and over and over. And maybe it's that damn good. But what conversation do we have where we sit with each other and say, is the loop good? Is the loop the one we want? Because if the answer comes back yes, well, thumbs up, man. Total success. Total success with life, and it could be simply that easy. But now, wouldn't it be nice to get a report card in the middle of life? A+. There you go. You're doing great. Keep going. Yes, the more you repeat that loop, the less you're going to remember, and the faster life will seem that it's transpiring. But you can always go back to your report card and say, but I am doing what I want to do. I love my life. I love myself. Love my family, my friends, etc., etc. You're good to go. If you're in that state, my assumption is maybe watching these types of videos is not something you're prone to do in the first place. Who knows? Maybe deep thoughts is one of your loops. definitely one of mine. But let's say that you're content, but you're not necessarily thrilled. You're more in a neutral wave of existence. And you want it to be a little bit more intense. Maybe time's flying by and you're not satisfied with it. You can't put it into words. You're not sure if my loop theory is correct, but you're like, yeah, you know what? Last 10 years just shot by, and I don't really have anything to put my finger on. Like, it was 10 years, and the thing is, you only get older. So, my first regimen for you would be to eat healthy, clean up your life, all that good stuff, so you slow down your aging, and you definitely routinely kill cancer in your body. You know, take your vitamin C every single day, at least 1,000 milligrams of time-release C. I take Solera. Take a B17 every once in a while. Just watch what you eat. But maybe a little bit of change in your life, and this is going to be change that you determine, so don't get freaked out. I think humanity fears change because change has been responsible for all cataclysms in human history. Oh, we're running the government this way. We've been doing it for 2,000 years and we're all happy. And don't you want something else? And someone goes, yeah, well, yeah, you know, what should we do? Oh, well, I was thinking about this thing called a dictatorship or a monarchy or despotism, you know, whatever. And then you mess it up. And you're like, oh my God, we're all starving to death now. And who's this guy with the whip on my back? And why am I in chains? And why am I building this palace? And all that kind of stuff. Why do we have money again? What's this stuff? The money? I got to work for this stuff just to do what I used to just do. I used to get water for everybody, but now I'm supposed to charge money. I got to charge money because this other jerk that used to give me food is now, in exchange for water, is now wanting this paper thing. That's why we have fear about changing. But if you're determining your change and you plan it, that's the cool thing. Planning is almost, again, a dirty word in this world. To premeditate your success is like, what are you, crazy? Just, you know, live off the cuff. Go out there and just do a bunch of crazy stuff. And hey, there are times for that as well, especially when you're young. But if you have the pocket in life, maybe your kids just get out of college and they're starting to get their careers, so they're good. You probably don't want to do anything that's life-threatening because you should probably stick around for your kids. They're going to need your guidance as life progresses, right? But what if you built a plan? And it's a pretty good plan because you made it. And you're willing to fall down, get back up, and fall down and get back up. Not a bad existence. You're going to learn every single time you fail. And then you're going to fail a lot less and a lot less. But if you plan and plan and plan, that failure rate will be as minimal as it can be. And I guess to stay with the theme of the episode, what I'm talking about, and I am just getting this epiphany myself, so I have only recently kind of come to grips with this, and I'm trying to take inventory of my life to see if I want to do any of this myself. So I'm in the same camp as you, which is breaking the loops. Breaking the loops. For me, I used to try to do something amazing every year of my life. Something that was like what a filmmaker might say is making a film every year. Maybe a musician might say making an album every year. And so they have this, you know, this impossible thing that they got through. They designed an impossible thing. Like writing a film and getting it made is damn near an impossible thing to do. It is. Getting an album made where a record company is going to buy it, also very, very tough. But you can do it. Everybody can get it done. Did I ever think I'd make over, you know, I'm at 400 episodes now if you count the special reports, and probably 450 for the ones I've had to throw away or lost for technical reasons. Before that, I did it 130 MKUltra radio shows. Do you think I ever thought that was possible or I'd ever hang on for that long? No way. I never thought that would happen. Yet, the show has a plan. I have a plan for the show. I plan the episodes. As I speak to you guys, I am planning ahead 5-10 minutes of what I'm going to say. You know, there's a, it's funny. I think, you know, as this show will end at some point, you'll be able to go back and piece things together like a little Da Vinci code. It's a bit like 17 in this show, believe it or not. Anytime I'm repeating myself, I'm on a subplot, just so you know. One of the really risky areas of social interaction is the notion that we want other people to live through something or experience something that we have recently experienced. And, you know, I just recently mentioned this, but it's sort of like, again, when someone takes some medicine and they get better, well, you want everyone to take that medicine if they get that particular sickness to get better. When I finally realized that vitamin C stabilized my entire health regimen, these two massive one-month colds I used to get every single year never happen anymore. I might get one for a week, maybe. And every single time I get a cold today, it's because I have become complicit I've taken for granted my health, and I will forget to take my pill, my vitamin C. As long as I keep on that, everyone around me is getting sick. I get nervous that I might get sick, but then eventually I go, no, I take C. I take B17. I eat well. I don't let stress get the best of me for any reason whatsoever. If I get into a stressful moment, I stop my life and I talk it out with myself. I try to figure it out. I talk to God. I talk to whoever I think is going to listen to make sure that I deal with it. Like, usually what it is, it's a little bit of a PTSD thing when you get stressed out. There'll be that thing where I'll feel stressed. I will have had a weird day and I'll feel stressed. And what it is, I don't feel like I've resolved it, at least with myself. Sometimes you need to resolve it with other people. You need to say you're sorry or do something. Like, you're late on a project and you've been goofing off, but you don't really feel like working. Maybe you're sick or whatever. And you have to come to terms with the variable that is your life. Is it possible to build a life without loops? Well, I'd say probably not. And so think about this as a mathematical formula. You're awake X number of hours in a day. And so you could really write this down on paper. This is what's really wild about this. And you could start calculating how much of your life is going to be forgotten in a particular year to a decade just by multiplying it up. Just an average, right? Because we sleep, that's a pattern, unless you dream. If you dream really deep dreams and you study them and think about them, I assure you they will become more elaborate, more amazing, and you will feel like I feel, which is I feel like I live two completely distinct lives. I know that sounds weird, but it's like my dreams are a holodeck. They're a veldt. I go into them and a whole different group of people, and they're generally very unique from dream to dream. Like I said in the other episode about dream geography, there, you know, I spend about a week in one place, maybe two, and then I move on to the next place. Sometimes there's some abstract ones thrown in there, which are actually super cool. And so there's that distinction. But I do get up and I go through my shower routine. You know, I mean, maybe one of the things that sort of parses a loop in the bathroom routine is you switch from Gillette razors to Dollar Shave Club. You switch from one shampoo that has a very distinct smell to another shampoo with a different distinct smell with this conditioner and all that stuff. You change soaps. I just changed to the Squatch soap. Just go to stimulus.com and it'll take you there. So sometimes that's a way to break up a routine. You got an old toothbrush, buy a new toothbrush. And you got some under your arm, doing it, change it. You know, maybe that's the way to kind of break up that loop a little bit. But then there's the question of, how much do you want to remember your bathroom routine? Maybe it's okay if that's completely forgotten. Your commute to work. Do you want to remember your commutes to work? I don't want to remember any of my commuting on the 405, just so you know. So then the math comes out, well, if you're spending 2 hours in a car every day because you got an hour commute one way, you have to decide, do you want to lose 2 hours a day to nothing? Because you're already losing a bunch of time to the routines that are getting up, getting showered, maybe your regimen of fixing meals for your kids and all that stuff. We got a squirrel. He's roughing up some birds. He's doing his little tail wag thing. Let's see if we can save these birds. Some of you see your jobs completely different than how others see jobs. Sometimes jobs are destinies. You know, I've got a good friend of mine who's a chiropractor. Loves his job. His wife's a chiropractor. She loves her job. I've got all kinds of friends like that where the couples are radiologists or something like that, right? And so if they dig their lives, then they're in that good loop. But maybe after 10 years, 15 years or whatever, they're kind of like, you know, I could do this my whole life. But maybe I owe it to myself, I owe it to my creator to venture out and do something a little bit different. And maybe you can do those two things at the exact same time. And while you're engaging in your sort of autonomic career that is now just, you don't even think about it, you just do it, you're really thinking about the other thing. So when you get home, you're going to do this other thing. On the weekend, you're going to really do the other thing. Maybe you take more time off. You shorten your day. Doctors do that all the time, right? They do their internships. They're working, you know, 12 to 24-hour shifts in some ER. And then when they get their private practice, they go down to like a 4 to 5-hour day. Like, I don't want this life. But I do want to heal people so they don't get out of the career. You know, if you're an astounding doctor, then, you know, perhaps keeping those long hours is what society can benefit from your amazing skills. But now, how many of you have told a younger person, no matter how exciting a career is, once you get in it, it does become work. It does. And only in certain jobs would that ever not be true. You know, very few musicians can stay famous as a musician their entire lives. I mean, we name them on our, you know, we can name them infinitely with, like, you know, Rolling Stones or Aerosmith. Those guys can never stop playing. I mean, because the whole world wants them to play constantly, and they haven't broke up their band, thank God. But there's a lot of bands that were gigantic in every decade that you'll wonder where they are. That's why VH1 made the whole series Where They Are Now. It's because they faded away. You know, it's a hell of a thing to be extremely famous and then be nobody. I mean, that I feel fortunate that I didn't go through that. Because I don't know how I would handle it. I don't know. Would I turn to drugs for the first time in my life? Would I start drinking for the first time in my life? I mean, how would I deal with it? Would I be totally content that I did something really great? Would I continue to help new musicians? I mean, I don't know. That's probably what I would do. But I know people that, well, like the gentleman I mentioned earlier, who's like all pro death, you know, he just like can't wait to punch out. He will do nothing to hurt himself. But, you know, when he dies, he's going to be like, all right, I'm out of this rat race or whatever. Well, it's because he's a legend. In his field of work, he is a legend. So, there's like a curse with every blessing sort of thing. I think one of the listeners posted a funny meme. I think I may have saw it on his personal account, but it was a picture of cave people eating things. And it says something like, hats off to early man for figuring out what we could eat that wouldn't kill us. Something like that. Really clever little meme. And it's true. Man ate everything until we figured out what would kill us and what wouldn't. Eat some mushrooms, you're gone. Eat some apples, you're super happy. But if you read a survival guide, if you get stuck out there in the wilderness or someplace you don't understand and you've got to eat something out there, you're going to die. They say to, especially with mushrooms, I mean, God, try to find anything else. But berries can be pretty bad for you as well. But what you do is you pick it. Whatever it is, and you nibble a tiny bit of it, and then you listen to your body as to whether or not you feel sick or feel comfortable. And I can't remember, I apologize, the amount of time that needs to pass. I'm pretty sure they said 8 hours, which seems like an eternity if you're starving, but then your body is a defense mechanism against feeling starving as well. You get over that road bump of feeling starving, and then you don't have any recollection of how hungry you are. It's just an interesting thing. It's one of the best ways to lose weight. But for those who are obese, that little bump in the road is a pretty big bump. But maybe that's the way we experiment with our life in trying to parse our loops a little bit. Baby steps. It's that Muppet movie with the big bear that kept saying baby steps. It was so hilarious. The things you see when you're a parent, I tell you. I'm always telling you guys I want you to have more control of your life, and that's because I want more control of my own. It's a personal theme, personal goal. Now, obsession is an illness in itself, so I'm not talking about trying to create something where, you know, you're dissatisfied with life because you don't have ultimate control over everything in your life. Hey, that's part of what's fun about riding a roller coaster. You're strapped into this thing, and you are trusting the engineering and the previous people that have ridden it that you will not die by the time this thing is over. It's not going to decapitate you. You're not going to go flying off. And I feel sorry for anyone who's had a major problem on a roller coaster. Could you imagine the anxiety that would install on you for the rest of your life? You know, I just on that whole stress bomb of potentially, you know, creating a psychosis with this goal. And I'm not really just talking about this goal when I make this comment. Anything you're trying to do because you really need a change to happen, you do. You need a new job. You need a job. You need to get out of an abusive situation, whatever it is. If you're being abused, that's a little bit different, especially physically. But mentally, it can be even worse. You guys will hear me mention every once in a while, boy, does it rub some people wrong. Unbelievable. Just a couple. But the whole thing about being cool, it's an old phrase we don't use anymore, right? A cool cat, spelled K-A-T. The notion is that you're fully functional, but you know how to manage your stress. You take things extremely seriously and to the best of your ability without any ridiculous assertion or exertion of your energy, you're able to deliver everything that you need to do. Be a husband, be a wife, be a parent, be an employee, being a CEO, whatever it is you're trying to do. You're relied on by other people. And so, I don't know how to communicate that besides to just define it a little bit such that you can play with that whole thing. As you're trying to change any dimension of your personal persona, character, id, your outer participation in life, you know, a lot of times things don't have the urgency like getting a job. If you have no income, that's a little bit different. But even in that scenario, I strongly suggest treating it with an optimism that is like what I love to call an obligatory moment in time, which means you're obligated to make this happen, and the world is obligated to give it to you as well. So just relax. It's going to happen. Dial it in. Feel it. Feel it before it happens. And that might be more of the regimen for breaking these loops. I mean, that's what I'm going to do, is kind of take a look at the loops. And what's weird about this, sort of ironic about this and coincidental about this for me personally, is that probably about, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago, I just made a decision that I was going to re-up my programming skills, especially web-based frameworks, because there's just a tremendous amount of them out there. It's all the same stuff. So, I mean, language-wise, it's never a problem. You're just trying to figure out, where do they put things? You know, it's like it's be moving from your house to someone else's house for some temporary reason, and you know, they have the trash can in a different area and different routines, and you're always asking questions. Well, where do you guys put this? And, you know, when do you guys get home again? Because I don't want to disturb you guys. You know, you're learning the protocol of the new location. So that's sort of what I've been doing in my personal technical life. A routine being changed could simply mean you rotate your restaurants, you rotate your visits to different friends. You add more friends to the mix. Maybe you're inside all the time and maybe you just need to get outside. Maybe you don't need to meet someone new. You just want to be physically in a different place. If you live next to some gorgeous landscape somewhere in your local area, yeah, go take a look at it. One of the biggest things that happens when you move to Los Angeles is that you will visit Los Angeles if you live near it, to go to Sunset Boulevard, Hollywood Boulevard, Disneyland, Universal Studios, blah, blah, blah. Museums, whatever. Beach, Venice Beach. But when you move here, you stop coming. I mean, you start going out to those locations because they're always here. And a lot of times when your friends visit, they want to go to those locations and you're sort of, you get it. You get it through taking your friends through it. And there's actually nothing like taking your friends to places where you're bored and they start getting really excited about it. And you're like, oh yeah, that's the way I used to feel about that. And it's sort of like watching a movie where you thought a movie was great and you show it to a friend who also thinks it's great. And so you're like, isn't this awesome? And they're like, oh yeah, this is great. And then you show the same movie to someone who doesn't get it. And they're just dry as a bone. They're not laughing at anything. They're not being blown away by anything. And you're like, you're having automatically, by sitting next to them, because we share frequencies and information, you're having a bad time watching this movie that you love. So just be aware of those dynamics as you try new things. And hell, even coming home with maybe something you would quantify as a failure, like, I didn't like that place at all. Well, at least you got out and broke your loop. Guess what you're going to remember? That time you went to that place that you didn't like. But because the world's a very dynamic place, you'll find a new place, a new thing to do. But again, this could be merely going in your backyard when you never go in your backyard. You got a barbecue and you never use it. You got a machine shop in your garage, a wood shop or whatever. You got a saw and a bunch of other stuff, but you bought it and you didn't touch it. You bought the treadmill. How many dead treadmills are in this world? And they're, you know, if you looked at the amount of feet or miles that you walked on it, you just got like 4 miles on it. And now you keep it because one day you're going to get healthy. You know, maybe go do it. Again, if you can't conceive of it, then you're on level 10. The second you conceive of it, you're on level 5. Typically, if it's possible. And if you take steps towards it, half, 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 all the way down. Until you're standing right on top of it and you're doing it. So in closing, let's talk about this little nugget. How many of you in your lifetime, when you contemplate why we're here, and maybe you have toyed with the notion of reincarnation especially, because I do, you think maybe we're supposed to be ascending in our consciousness, sort of upgrading our soul with our experiences until we become, perhaps as an example, very empathetic towards other people. If we start off very stoic, you know, there's cultures around the world that are very stoic and seem to have no empathy. You'll watch these videos of someone getting crushed under a truck and there's a person walking on the sidewalk and they just go, eh, whatever, do-do-do-do-do. And you see it in America and 50,000 people run over to help. Maybe our journey in this world is to keep upgrading and upgrading and upgrading. And, you know, the sad truth is, and I don't really personally think it's a sad thing, although I don't like to experience it, is the negative things that we experience in life are really probably the moment when we grow the most. And I mean any negative thing, from horrific to slightly annoying, it's when we grow the most. And so this tuning of reality such that you do remember more of it because you abolish the loops that are so mundane. There's no maturation in your script. You're not maturing whatsoever in the script. You're just the dude who does that. Now, if you can't perceive of anything else, you're probably not even watching this show. But if you can, you're probably watching. And therefore, you have the ability to do something very special with your life. And it doesn't matter what age, because we're not talking about giant fame things. We're talking about slight adjustments to your loops. Maybe you go back and get some loops that you forgot about. Upgrade the ones that you're doing. That project that you've always been wanting to do, you do it. Because that's going to create a wild-ass loop. You know, if I wanted to enclose this patio and build it all the way out, well, I know where to go to get the information. I know the guys to call to handle all of the construction, et cetera, et cetera. Well, don't you think, from the moment I make that decision to close in this patio to the point where I can close the door, and there's a big thunderstorm outside, and it's cold and windy, and I'm all warm and cozy in here. Don't you think that'd break a bunch of loops until that's done? I mean, I would never forget a day, most likely, of any part of that process. I don't know what would be after this existence, or whether or not this existence would become even easier the more we go through this loop, which is, the loop of life, being reborn over and over and over again. Again, riding the roller coaster that God spent a lot of time building and being told that you're not supposed to ride it again because that would make God mad. It's just the weirdest theory I've ever heard in my life. Reincarnation doesn't exist. Why? Because God would get upset? What? You know, it's like, I don't think so. Walt Disney didn't want you to ride any of his rides once. And it wasn't just a monetary, you know, goal of his. It was, I built the place. Go for it, man. Okay, that bird chirp you're hearing is an alarm because the squirrel's coming back. How trippy is that? He's blowing the alarm and he's like, everybody get inside. Oh, wait, we're outside. Well, he's checking me out. He's like, is he going to see me again? We all need a little something to kick us in the butt every once in a while, don't we? I feel like we do. You know, if you're on, well, let's put it this way. If your loops get so tight that whatever you're doing to make a living or to enjoy your life, you know, for anyone else, it would be a level 9. For you, it's a level 1 because you've just done it so much. You make it look easy sort of thing. Well, maybe you might consider kicking it up to level 10 for everybody else. For you, you just go back and you're like, well, is there any way I can make this better? Is there a way I can perfect this thing? Because once you get good at something in your mind will contribute that skill to everything else you're doing. Wasn't the samurai supposed to round out his mind by writing poetry and becoming a botanist? Reaching inside your soul to find something that hasn't been said before and say it's so beautiful that you move people. That's a hell of a goal. Hell of a goal. In my experience, you only move people that are at the level of your poetry. Taking care of plants, very interesting idea, because plants are their own being. They have their own consciousness, their own life cycles. They need love. They need security. They need to know that you love them and you're going to take care of them. Otherwise, they die. Anyone who gets a plant because they think they look cool in their house, they usually deal with a bunch of dead plants. A person who loves plants and, you know, specifically picks the ones that when they stare at the geometry of the plant, they're like, wow, that's so beautiful. That's a plant that feels loved. And they could get 20 of them and they got a green thumb for it. We're always looking for new frontiers as human beings, right? Way back in season 1, my big epiphany in life was that we are drawn to unique patterns, different than the patterns that we're drawn to on a daily basis. That's why we explored the world. If you grew up in a desert community and then you said, well, you know what, I don't dislike this place, but, you know, I'm looking at those mountains in the distance and there's this white stuff on top. I want to know what that is. And could you imagine someone coming out of a desert community, walking up to a mountain? They don't really know how to climb a mountain, but they get high enough. Let's just say it's not too formidable. They get up there and they pick up snow for the first time. Phenomenal. A friend of mine just said that they had seen snow for the first time. Really wild. That must have been a euphoric situation. Water fell out of the sky in a condensed, iced over fashion that was first initially a snowflake and then snow. Imagine holding a snowflake in your hand for the very first time and going, oh my God, look at the geometry on this thing. Every single one of these things is unique, but they're all symmetrical to each other, to themselves. Cut them, you know, any way you want through the center, and the other half is exactly the same. Wow. Isn't that huge? I am firmly now of the theory that your mind erases repeat patterns. It erases it as the mundane, the useless. Why remember that? You don't want to remember that. You have no vested interest in remembering that. So, in closing, let's do this. If you're interested in this theory, and if you feel like, damn, you know, 10 years is going by way too fast, and you love life, get a piece of paper and a pen, an old analog system, and write down all the things in a day, because think about your weekdays being slightly different than your weekends. And I understand being tired, trust me. And tired could be an excuse that could be corrected by getting better sleep. Kim.com just posted a post like a couple days ago, and he said, never deprive yourself of a good sleep. But specifically what he said was, don't worry about, don't feel guilty for sleeping anytime you're tired. Don't worry about sleeping at night as much as worried about your sleep. And his formula was actually quite interesting, which is worth sharing. He said, make sure the room is dark, quiet, and cold. Cold. Interesting. So he says you can sleep during the day, just make sure your room is all isolated so the sun doesn't keep you up. I'm so acclimated to sleeping with the sun up, it's frightening. My grandparents used to take naps. I'm going to get back to this cold thing in a second. But my grandparents used to take naps 1 hour a day right after lunch because they realized that when you eat lunch, it makes you sleepy. My friend Sid Mead never ate lunch in his heyday because he said, it makes me tired and I work 12-hour days. So I've always kept that close. And if you're young, keep that one close to yourself. Understand that about your body. But he always ate breakfast, so there's the trade-off, right? But cold, There is a house in Pasadena called the Gamble House. It is the house that was used in the movie, the first two, as the Back to the Future house that Doc lived in. It's an arts and crafts house. It is absolutely gorgeous. You can come to Pasadena and tour the house. I think it's on Orange Avenue. If you're in the area, and that has even the slightest bit of interest to you, go do it. But when you went upstairs on the second floor, they had this beautiful balcony. It was massive. This house is beautiful. It's not a massive house, but it was just, the balcony was bigger than the normal balcony, and it wrapped all around the house. It was really cool. But they had these big, giant, I gotta stop using those words. It had a much larger sort of lounge chair made of wood. And the bedding on it was super thick, and it was probably about 3 feet wide, if not wider. And I think they still had the bedding on it as part of the demo, part of the tour, when you pay to go to it. It's like $14 or something like that. It's worth the money, trust me. If nothing else, just to see the set of Back to the Future, it's kind of cool. You'll see the fireplace. That's one of the cool things, the downstairs set. But what they told us was that the people, the Gamble family, which was extremely wealthy, would go outside at night to sleep. And they'd get in these chairs, and they had these special blankets that would go right up to your neck. And your face was always exposed to the elements. Now, of course, if it's raining, you're not going to do that. But they would sleep outside. And even though Pasadena gets really, really warm in the summertime, I mean, 100 degrees is not a big deal there. At night, it does get measurably cool, and especially if you spent the whole day outside, you know, going down to 65 at night, it's going to be chilly. And you have to assume, I'm going to give you another example of this, but you have to assume that the richest people in the world have a pretty good regimen. Their loops are pretty good. That's how they got where they got, and that family was part of building their own fortune, so it wasn't like they inherited it all and they're just blowing it in weird ways. But there was another location I went to, which is a hidden gem of the Bay Area. The Bay Area has two main highways going through it, which is San Francisco. So you go south of San Francisco. There's two highways. One's the 101 and one's the 280. The 280 is in this beautiful wilderness area where the 101's got, you know, industry all the way up and down the highway. A bit like the 5 in L.A. But the 280 is one of the most beautiful drives you can have. It ends at this street way up north. But just south of the 92, there is a mansion which was used in a couple movies. Heaven Can Wait is the big one with Warren Beatty. But it's called Filoli. It stands for Fight, Love, Live. It is on, I believe, 43 acres. They have a mansion there. They have quite a few littler homes here and there on there, but mostly it's a big garden. It's this phenomenal giant garden. If you ever wonder where garden shots are done, and we have a few in LA, but a lot of, you know, like Game of Thrones type things where they're walking in a garden, sometimes they'll film up there. They film a ton of car commercials. So when you go down the 280, you get off on this side road, and it's just right next to the 280, and that's where they film a lot of the car commercials. But you'll see the sign for Filoli, and you look over into the woods, and you can't see it. It's like a mile inland, and it's all strotted with like a minor woods slash forest kind of thing. But they had the same thing, the same story about sleeping outside in one of the tours I took. And so it started to kind of solidify of like, wow, interesting, right? These people sleep outside in the cold. This is a little gem for you guys. Maybe someone can study that or elaborate in the comments as to why that's such a good thing for the body. You know, when you, it's summertime and you have all your winter blankets that you waiting for that one night when you get sort of nauseous because you got too many blankets on yourself, you're overheating. You start peeling them off and then you fold them and put them away until summer's over. And maybe we're doing ourselves a big disservice. I think one of the big things is that when you're overheated, you can stay in bed for almost, you know, all day. You can go from your 6 to 7 hour regimen to a 12 hour regimen overnight because you're too hot. But anyway, back to the theme to close out. I think there's some loops that we can analyze so we don't forget what we're doing here. Loops are related 100% to the quality of life, right? So let's just take slow inventory of the whole situation, figure out whether or not we want to make any changes. If you see a change that you can make, just plan it out. Try to look at the consequences and treat it like a business. Just like, okay, what are the risk factors in making this change to my life? Am I going to cut somebody out of my life that's really important? Meaning, you know, you do something, you lose track of your kids or you alienate your spouse, you mess up your job. Make sure none of that stuff's going to occur. But then just have fun with it. Once you figure out your parameters, maybe go for it. I hope you feel me. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go so we can switch from audio to video. There's a locked Facebook group with a bunch of amazing people in there. We have a Twitter account now, in case you prefer to get your notices that way. It's a little slow on the update because I'm not a big Twitter person. There are two ways to contribute / donate to the show. Patreon is an account up there in case you want to put in a monthly ding. As per the request of folks that want to just put in a single amount of cash and walk away, I turned on the PayPal contribution link so you guys can get up there as well. There's also a tiny little store. So, with that in mind, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over and out.